Hi, this is Janine Dixon with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. As we come to the end of the year, I want to take a moment to thank all of the listeners of the ID the Future podcast and all of our supporters. As Educational Outreach Coordinator, I can tell you that without the financial support of our loyal friends and contributors, we would be hard-pressed to spread our messages about science, education, academic freedom, and intelligent design. You make it possible. If you enjoy the ID the Future podcast, please consider giving at idthefuture.com by clicking on the yellow donate button at the top of the page. We need your help to keep this important podcast going. Go to idthefuture.com and click on the yellow donate button. That's www.idthefuture.com. Thank you so much for your support. And now, on with the show.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. In my household, we feel very fortunate because we celebrate both Christmas and Hanukkah. But that means that around this time of the year, we're looking for a lot of gifts to buy for a lot of family members. In fact, you might also be looking for gifts right now, so please let me make a suggestion. If you have a friend who perhaps is a Generation Xer or a millennial, or really any kind of a friend who's interested in important cultural issues, consider giving them a subscription to Salvo magazine. Salvo is a quarterly magazine that covers hot-button cultural issues dealing with science, sex, and society, including interesting articles on intelligent design and Darwinian evolution in every issue, coming from an ID-friendly perspective, of course. The writing and graphical layout are all top quality. It's a unique and high-quality magazine that is a great way to stay informed on many issues, including intelligent design. So check out www.salvomag.com today and consider buying a subscription for a friend or maybe even for yourself. It would make a great Christmas or Hanukkah gift or any kind of a gift. As a little preview of what you'll find when you buy Salvo, here's my article from the fall 2012 issue titled Deity Added, Theistic Evolution is Nearly as Problematic as Atheistic Darwinism. In Salvo 21, I discussed philosophical problems with theistic evolution, the view that God used blind Darwinian processes to create life. Amid all the logical and theological problems associated with theistic evolution's central claim that God guided an unguided process, there is a much more immediate flaw. The scientific evidence does not support the view that life arose and diversified by strictly evolutionary mechanisms. Now, before critiquing the science of theistic evolution, we must investigate what its science says. This is a simple inquiry. Theistic evolutionists make precisely the same scientific arguments that secular atheistic Darwinian evolutionists also make. Theistic evolutionists essentially baptize materialistic ideas saying, and by the way, God did it that way. Although when pressed, they'd admit that you can't empirically detect God's actions in any of it. But are we obligated to submit to the evolutionary consensus? In this article, we'll review several ideas in which theistic evolutionists make scientific claims that are both indistinguishable from those of their atheistic counterparts and unsupported by scientific evidence. Along the way, we'll mention other Salvo issues that have covered these topics in more detail. First, the origin of life. Some theistic evolutionists admit that the origin of life remains a mystery. Others, however, maintain that we should pursue the idea that life got started through unguided chemical processes. For example, in Salvo issues 13 and 14, we saw that BioLogos Foundation President Daryl Falk, a leading theistic evolutionist, defended the search for blind and unguided chemical processes that could account for the origin of the genetic code. And as we discussed in those same issues, evolutionary theorists cannot explain the origin of life's language-based code. But that's not the only place where origin of life research is stuck. The Miller-Urey experiments, which supposedly showed how a primordial soup arose on the early Earth, have been discredited because they inaccurately model the atmosphere. The RNA world hypothesis is plagued by difficulties with creating RNA under natural conditions. No model makes a serious attempt to explain the origin of biological information. In 2007, Harvard chemist George Whitesides was given the Priestley Medal, the highest award of the American Chemical Society. During his acceptance speech, he offered this stark analysis. Quote, "The origin of life. This problem was one of the big ones in science. It begins to place life and us in the universe. Most chemists believe, as do I, that life emerged spontaneously from mixtures of molecules in the prebiotic Earth. How? I have no idea." Unquote. If origin of life theorists give so few scientific reasons to adopt their position, why are theistic evolutionists so quick to come to their defense? The reason, as you might suspect, isn't scientific, but philosophical. It stems from a deeply embedded and deeply misguided assumption that one never ought to question whatever science says. Let's now talk about natural selection and random mutation. Arguably, the evolution of life is where theistic evolutionists defer the most to orthodox Darwinian thinking. In their book, The Language of Science and Faith, Francis Collins and Carl Giberson insist that they are, quote, unfamiliar with any premier scientists who reject evolution, unquote, and conclude that, quote, Christians should take no comfort in the misplaced hope that the scientific community is gradually abandoning the theory of evolution, unquote. Their comments are ironic, since leading scientists increasingly doubt the neo-Darwinian model of evolution. The standard neo-Darwinian view holds that natural selection acting upon random mutations was the driving force that accounts for life's diversity. But a growing number of highly credible scientists doubt this position. Lynn Margulis, a premier scientist herself and a member of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences until her death in 2011, explained this in an interview in 2011, stating, quote, Neo-Darwinists say that species emerge when mutations occur and modify an organism. I was taught over and over again that the accumulation of random mutations led to evolutionary change, which led to new species. I believed it until I looked for the evidence, unquote. According to Margulis, quote, new mutations don't create new species, they create offspring that are impaired, unquote. In 2008, 16 biologists from around the world convened in Altenburg, Austria, to discuss problems with the neo-Darwinian synthesis. The top scientific journal Nature covered this Altenburg 16 conference, quoting leading scientists saying things like, quote, the modern synthesis is remarkably good at modeling the survival of the fittest, but not the arrival of the fittest, unquote, or quote, the origin of wings and the invasion of the land are things that evolutionary theory has told us little about, unquote. According to Susan Mazur, a science journalist who covered the conference, these 16 scientists are not alone. She reported that there are, quote, hundreds of other evolutionary scientists, non-creationists, who contend that natural selection is politics, not science, and that we are in a quagmire because of the staggering commercial investment in a Darwinian industry built on an inadequate theory, unquote.
The year after Altenburg 16, Eugene Koonin of the National Center for Biotechnology Information stated in Trends in Genetics that breakdowns in core neo-Darwinian tenets, such as the, quote, traditional concept of the tree of life, unquote, or the view that, quote, natural selection is the main driving force of evolution, unquote, indicate that, quote, the modern synthesis has crumbled, apparently, beyond repair, unquote. Not to mince words, Koonin concluded, quote, the modern synthesis is gone, unquote.
While 21st century biology is moving beyond the standard neo-Darwinian model of evolution, sometimes adopting the same critiques made by proponents of intelligent design, theistic evolutionists appear stuck in the mid-20th century, defending a dying paradigm. Let's also look at universal common ancestry. One of the faltering tenets of neo-Darwinism mentioned by Eugene Koonin is the tree of life. In Salvo 21, we saw that Francis Collins snidely compared those who doubt universal common ancestry to flat earthers. Nevertheless, the revolution in DNA sequencing has provided immense amounts of data that challenge universal common ancestry. The fundamental problem is that one gene gives you one version of the tree of life, while another gene yields an entirely different and conflicting version of the tree. Numerous examples of this problem are recounted in the literature. To give a recent one, a June 2012 paper in Nature reported that short strands of RNA called microRNAs are, quote, tearing apart traditional ideas about the animal family tree, unquote. Dartmouth biologist Kevin Peterson, who studies microRNAs, lamented, quote, I looked at thousands of microRNA genes, but I can't find a single example that would support the traditional tree, unquote. Peterson put it bluntly, stating, quote, the microRNAs are totally unambiguous. They give a totally different tree from what everyone else wants, unquote. What about human origins and junk DNA? Other areas in which theistic evolutionists insist we must submit to evolutionary consensus ideas are within human origins and junk DNA. Theistic evolutionists love to argue that our cells are full of functionless DNA, which many call genetic junk. In The Language of God, Francis Collins claims that some 45% of the human genome is, quote, made up of such genetic flotsam and jetsam, unquote. As the argument goes, God would never put such useless DNA into our chromosomes, so we must conclude that random mutation and natural selection built our genome. Collins makes these implications clear, stating, quote, unless one is willing to take the position that God placed shared functionless DNA in these precise locations to confuse and mislead us, the conclusion of a common ancestor for humans and mice is virtually inescapable, unquote. Imagine that. A self-described Christian, Francis Collins, appears to be arguing against God's direct involvement in the origin of the human genome. But is he correct? The problem with Collins' argument isn't so much theological as it is scientific. Numerous examples of function have been discovered for the so-called junk DNA. While there's much we still don't understand about the genome, the trend line suggests that the vast majority of our DNA plays a vital role in regulating cellular processes. Collins himself admits that this type of evidence defeats his argument. Functional genetic similarity alone does not, quote, prove a common ancestor, unquote, he writes, because a designer could have, quote, used successful design principles over and over again, unquote. So the more junk DNA we find function for, the more this theistic evolutionist argument retreats into the gaps in our knowledge. As Jonathan Wells put it in Salvo 18, quote, calling something in a living cell junk just because no one knows its function is a science stopper. Biologists make progress not by closing their eyes to junk, but by looking out for new functions, unquote. In contrast, the intelligent design paradigm would have encouraged biologists to seek function for junk DNA long ago. Theistic evolutionists commonly contend that we must accept materialist explanations of life origins and diversification because, they say, there is no empirical evidence to the contrary. This, we are told, is the only respectable option because one must never question anything science says. In contrast, Ida uses this motto, let's follow the evidence wherever it leads. This brief review shows that the evidence is not leading to a Darwinian evolutionary viewpoint, whether theistic or otherwise. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future, reminding you to give a gift of Salvo Magazine this Christmas or Hanukkah to a friend as a present. Visit salvomag.com for more information. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.